Welcome to Here and Now. I'm Devin Katayama with WFPL News. We're joined for the next half hour with Louisville Metro's new police chief, Steve Conrad. Mr. Conrad, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
You began in March as the new police chief, replacing Chief Robert White. You're not foreign to Louisville Metro. You've served as an assistant chief for a number of years and helped craft the merged Louisville Metro Police Department as we know it in 2003. You went on to serve in Glendale, Arizona as police chief for a number of years, 6 years. Now you're back. Welcome back.
Thank you.
You've formed something of a 90-day plan, or at least given yourself a few months to get accustomed to back into the community. You're meeting with certain constituents. What are people saying? How has Louisville changed since you were last here?
You know, I think every community grows, every community changes, and it's been interesting. I think as I've had the opportunity to meet with people and do a number of interviews. The question is, what's the plan? And quite frankly, I didn't walk in the door with a fully formalized plan. I walked in the door with a vision that we, working together, we in the Metro Police Department, we in Metro Government, we in this community can work together to create a safer city. The vision is that we be the safest city in America. Will we ever get there? I don't know. But if we are working together to make improvements, we're going to make great strides towards achieving that vision. And that's how you do strategic planning. That's how you improve. And as I've met with members of our community, members of our department, I am soliciting their ideas and their suggestions. And essentially, I'm keeping a running list. And unless somebody brings something to my attention that needs to be immediately addressed because it is affecting safety in our community, or we're doing something that affects our officer safety as they go about doing their job. I'm not making immediate changes. I'm going to take this list, work with our department to really categorize them and to develop plans to address each of the issues that hopefully will get us from where we are today
now
to a safer community.
How do you take all the information that you're accumulating over the past few weeks and into the future? How do you take that information and make certain plans or make certain decisions? What gets weighted? Does weight from the administration get a heavier call, or does something from the community or individual's perspective get a bigger weight?
You know, that's a great question, and you know, from my perspective, if I tend to hear about an issue from a variety of the different groups that I'm talking to, if I'm hearing an issue internally and externally, it's probably a problem that's going to percolate to the top, that's going to garner more of our attention. The great thing about leading a dynamic, large organization like the Metro Police Department is the fact that I've got so many talented people that work there that are going to give their time and their energy to really help us develop what I think will be a comprehensive plan that will allow us to work to make these improvements. I followed a similar model when I went to Glendale over 6 years ago, and quite frankly, I'd love to take credit for this approach, but I learned it from Chief White, who indicated to me he did this when he went into Greensboro and when he developed the housing police department in Washington, D.C. So this is kind of a tried and true approach to identifying issues and to developing a plan to address the issues.
Now, in Glendale, how long did it take you to develop that plan?
You know, it was a bit of a living document. We developed what I referred to as a work plan, probably in a couple of months. And I ended up working with the command staff there to develop the plan after I'd garnered input, and essentially assigned each member of my staff as the owner for a particular portion or a particular strategy. That way I had the opportunity to hold some particular person accountable to make sure we followed through and got things done.
You recently asked residents to do their part in supporting public safety. You're referring more to comments about abandoned properties, but it seemed to extend past that. There seemed to be some financial implications to this as well. But for residents who look to police for support, what does doing their part look like?
You know, making our community safer is not only the job of a police department. We are a part of this community. We're, I believe, a critical part of the community, but for us to really achieve the kind of community we want, we need to do what we can, we as citizens here in our community, to avoid or reduce the opportunity for victimization. At the very base level, I'm looking for people to employ and utilize basic crime prevention tactics. And this is common sense kind of stuff. Don't leave your cell phone and your laptop or your purse sitting in the front seat of your car in the parking lot. You're asking for someone to break into your car and take it.
How do you encourage those campaigns? How do you encourage that support? How do you get people motivated?
We have some grassroots kind of organizations out there already through the Neighborhood Watch program. We can push that kind of message out to people. I met with an advisory committee that had been put together for Chief White that is still very active, that represents neighborhood leaders in our community. And, you know, this suggestion came from them to develop public service announcements. We were effective, I think, in putting together some PSAs in the Glendale area that educated people about the importance of doing this kind of activity, particularly around the holiday season, when people are inclined to go into the stores and finish the first part of their shopping trip, put it in the car where people can see it, and they're going back into the stores and coming out and being disappointed.
Now, how do you give individuals power? Take the situation with the Trayvon Martin case, the large controversy on overstepping a public safety boundary into what seems like a gross abuse of power by a neighborhood watchman. How does a chief or an administration appropriately handle that kind of situation?
You know, and I've made this comment at a number of the meetings I've attended here recently. I think Mr. Zimmerman has given Neighborhood Watch a seriously bad name. There is no way, in my experience, that any police department would empower a neighborhood watch, block watch, whatever you want to call it, person to take matters into their own hands. The training that we provide neighbors is really focused on being observant, being a good witness, and most importantly, getting to know your neighbors. That's what Neighborhood Watch is all about. You know, you see some suspicious activity down the street. If you don't know the people that live down the street, you may not first recognize whether or not it's suspicious. But even if you do have that recognition, you may not be willing to get involved, to pick up the phone, to call the police, to report it, because you don't really know that person. But it's awfully hard to ignore your friend. It's awfully hard to ignore something that is going on that might be a crime when you know that person. So I think you're willing to stick your neck out for a friend. You may not be willing to stick your neck out for that person down the street you don't know. That's what Neighborhood Watch is about. It's building safer, sustainable communities through getting to know one another.
Now, is there space in the budget to expand this way, to provide programs or campaigns to the public to do this?
You know, the great thing about this kind of outreach is it can be done on a shoestring, literally. It is officers' time in terms of getting out, meeting the neighbors, helping them organize. But what it takes is that spark, someone in that neighborhood who's willing to pull together their friends, the ones they know and the ones they don't know in their block, to bring them together for an evening, for a Saturday, you know, you name it, where our officers can come and share with them the basic tools that it takes, the development of a phone tree, what to report, what not to report, when to use 911, when to use the non-emergency number. And with that kind of outreach, you know, we have the power to extend Neighborhood Watch to many, many neighborhoods without a significant impact on our budget.
Now, the March recruitment class for Louisville Metro Police has been delayed until June, the March class till June. Mayor Fisher has said this won't affect public safety. Do you agree?
You know, I think what's important is we get those officers hired and we get them in the academy and get them out there on the streets. I had an opportunity today to review the background information on the members of that class. We're still in the process of selecting who will be in that class, and I felt really good that such quality young people are interested in a career of service, which is what the police department is all about.
If you were to expand, what areas would you expand first?
In terms of what?
As far as your department and what kind of programs or things are available.
That question gets back to your first question, where we were talking about planning and talking about changes. I'm still really waiting for the plan to develop, but first and foremost, patrol and patrol activities are the backbone of everything we do. Our effectiveness as a department is really judged not so much on how we react to crime, but our ability to prevent it. And we prevent crime by having officers in the right place at the right time doing the right things, and that requires a commitment to our patrol divisions.
On a similar note, you've recently met with a new group called Connected Voices,
yes.
Organized to act as a communication between various communities and the police department, various agencies. I was wondering if that's more of an issue between communication between command and the community or the administration, the police officers on patrol and the community.
You know, I think it's probably one that I hope will grow into the other. What Connected Voices offers and what I'm really, really excited about is a way to reach out to young people in our community, to engage them and to involve them. One of the things that I shared during our meeting was, you know, the opportunity to first demonstrate that young people can trust law enforcement. I mean, and there's some friction. You know, it was a long time ago, but I remember being a kid and you know, you'd see a police officer and maybe you're, you know, 16 years old and driving them. You see them behind you and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm getting ready to get pulled over. They, in fact, may be heading to another call, not paying any attention to you at all. But, you know, that fear, that concern is normal. Our officers are out in neighborhoods that are interacting with people. And we're looking for those interactions to be positive unless the person's, you know, involved in some sort of criminal activity. And I think Connected Voices gives us the opportunity to get to know young people, to let young people know more about who we are, what we do, and to start developing that relationship of trust. And over time, my hope is that we can use this as an opportunity to recruit more people into law enforcement.
So it sounds like it's more so the relationship between the officers themselves on the ground and the community?
Yeah, I think, you know, it starts with us laying the foundation for that opportunity. But yeah, really where the officers are out there and interacting with the community is what's most important. I mean, for me to say it, for me to talk about it, if it's not happening at the street, it really has no value.
We're going to take a short break. We're talking to Steve Conrad, Louisville Metro's new police chief. We'll have more with the chief in just a bit.
Support for WFPL comes from the 45th Annual Historic Bardstown Antiques Show and Sale at Nelson County High School on U.S. 62 this Saturday from 10 to 5 and Sunday 11 to 4. The show includes dealers from many states offering a range of antiques from museum quality to mid-century collectibles. More at 812-951-3454. From the Speed Art Museum, hosting the Derby Thursday Brunch Thursday, May 3rd. A Day at the Races begins with brunch at the Speed, complete with musical entertainment, cocktails, the Renoir to Chagall exhibition, parking in the Speed Garage, and shuttle service to the track. Details and tickets at 637-6363.
You're listening to 89.3 WFPO. Coming up later on Here and Now, there have been several recent setbacks in the relationship between the U.S. and Afghanistan, but the effort to convince the Afghan people to turn away from the Taliban and control their own security continues. We'll have the latest on that story. That's still to come on WFPL's Here and Now.
And welcome back. I'm Devin Katayama with WFPL News. We're joined for the next few minutes with Louisville Metro's new police chief, Steve Conrad. Mr. Conrad, there was recently a video released of an officer who seemingly roughed up a suspect during an altercation in Old Louisville. That officer was put on administrative leave, and you ordered a public integrity investigation. In your experience, and you've been around for a while, how often are those investigations followed through with appropriately, and what usually comes of them?
In speaking in general terms, there are a couple of different ways an investigation can go. If the behavior involves criminal activity, we will implement a criminal investigation, and when that investigation is concluded, We will follow up with an internal investigation, which would be performed by our professional standards unit investigators. Some situations involve a breach of our department's standard operating procedures or general orders. It does not involve criminal behavior or the possibility of criminal behavior. In those kinds of situations, we would do a professional standards or an administrative investigation only. Depending on what the circumstances involve, if the investigation does indicate that a violation of the law or a violation of our policies has occurred, then we affix some sort of level of discipline or accountability. Now, you know, I try to differentiate as I look at disciplinary issues between mistakes of the head and mistakes of the heart. You know, if an employee and we have people that aren't sworn officers that make mistakes as they do their job. I mean, we're all human. We make mistakes. If it's a situation where we didn't know better, where we could have made a better decision, but we didn't have the information we needed, that's a mistake of the head. Training or counseling or coaching can correct those kinds of mistakes. But if an employee knew better and acted inappropriately, then I think, you know, a higher level of discipline is warranted. When we do a fixed discipline, we look at similar situations that have occurred in the past, and we try to be consistent with our past practices and policies to ensure that we're not treating an individual more harshly or less harshly than how we have treated employees in similar situations in the past.
Now, in the video, it seems like the officer slaps the suspect. Is there any situation where that's okay?
It's kind of hard to speculate. I mean, you could have a situation where a person was trying to assault you. The law and our policies do allow us to use force, even deadly force, in situations where we need to do it to make an arrest, to overcome somebody that's trying to assault us. So yes, the law does provide the opportunity, when necessary, for us to use force. What it requires, however, both our policies and the law, is that our use of force is reasonable under those circumstances.
How quickly might an investigation move through the process?
You know, the goal for our investigations is that within 45 days, we try to complete an investigation. When that doesn't happen, that period can be extended. But what is important to us, as opposed to setting an arbitrary deadline, is that we do a thorough and complete investigation. If we can complete it more quickly, we do so. If it takes more time, you know, I'm going to give it the time it needs, because what's important, and I think we owe this to members of our community, but also to our employees, that we do a thorough and complete investigation, and we are making decisions with all the facts.
Now, this topic has always been around Louisville. There are gangs in Louisville, but does Louisville have a gang problem?
I believe that we have people who are out committing crimes together in an organized fashion that would potentially be prosecuted under the laws here in Kentucky as a criminal syndicate. They're committing crimes for the benefit of that group. I think, you know, the term gang is affixed to a lot of situations where that may not be appropriate. But yes, there are gangs that are out there committing crimes for the benefit of that group. And those are problems that clearly we want to address. I think, you know, our effectiveness comes through the identification of people that are involved in committing crimes all the time. And if they're members of a criminal syndicate, folks that are working together in a gang, then we need to be targeting them.
Is that high on your list to talk about and to discuss?
Not necessarily gangs, but repeat offenders. There were studies that were done in the early 80s, and they've been replicated a number of times, that point to an active 10% of criminals in any community will be responsible for somewhere between 55 and 60% of the crime. The goal for law enforcement is to identify those 10%ers, target them, and get them in jail.
You've recently said intelligence is one of the most important weapons. How will intelligence change?
You know, I think, and that was taken a little bit out of context, intelligence-led policing is a model that we're seeing around the country, and essentially it involves a couple of components. Crime analysis: what's happening, Where is it happening? When is it happening? How is it happening? And then the intelligence component is trying to identify who's doing it. And that intelligence can come through talking to people after they're arrested, talking to people in the community, talking to neighbors that are involved in Block Watch. We're looking at a variety of different means for gathering that information. And then putting the two of those together, it's that crime information that will then lead our activities to be able to address those repeat offenders.
Now, we had a comment from somebody representing an immigrant and refugee population saying, for those who are afraid to kind of report crimes to the police, not just, you know, immigrants and refugees, but for all demographics that are kind of afraid to report crimes to the police, is there something that you can do to support people in coming forward and helping police investigations out?
You know, we do. We set up a tip line a number of years ago that allows people to report crimes to us anonymously, to report activities to us anonymously. I would encourage anyone who sees a crime in progress to call 911. You know, you would hate to have that kind of situation going on, but if you're wanting to pass information on to us anonymously, you can do that through 574-LMPD.
Any other ideas for expanding the support?
You know, there are a variety of different mechanisms that I've seen around the country that involve use of social media as a way to provide different tips to the police, and those are things we're going to look at.
We just have a couple minutes left.
Sure.
Has the police department had any communication with Fisher's administration about what steps to take Friday if the group of people, the Occupy Louisville group at Founders Square, do not want to move?
You know, we have developed a number of different contingency plans. That's what I'm responsible to develop as the police chief here in this community. You know, I've read the same comments that I guess we all have in the paper of plans of the people who are camping there now without a permit. Some have indicated an interest in moving. Some have indicated an interest in being arrested. And, you know, we're going to be in a position to deal with whatever might come along.
Is there a place for civil disobedience? We would just have about 20 seconds in democracy.
You know, clearly there is. And I believe and have sworn to uphold the Constitution along with the laws of this country and this state. So, I truly believe there is room for that.
Steve Conrad is Louisville Metro's new police chief. Mr. Conrad, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much.
This conversation can be found in just a bit on our website, wfpl.org. You can also access a link on our Facebook page. Search WFPL.